Thank you to Blessing Zulu and Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. And as usual, we'd like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The ZANU-PF Politburo expels the party's former Secretary for Administration, Didmus Mutasa, and Urungwe West lawmaker Themba Muliswa as the pages of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru's allies continues.
I think that ZANU-PF has a long history of expelling people, and that it almost depends on the aptitude and the abilities of those that are expelled to manage themselves, with the view of whether returning back to the party or certainly staying outside the party completely.
There was chaos in Parliament today when Acting Speaker Mabel Chinomona tried to eject opposition MDC lawmakers from the House for protesting that cabinet ministers have been failing to turn up to respond to their questions every Wednesday, as was the case today.
And the U.S. Embassy in Harare dismisses as a great deal of misinformation a story published by the state-controlled Herald newspaper regarding U.S. aid support to the NGO sector in Zimbabwe.
In a breaking news story, the ZANU-PF Politburo met today and expelled former Party Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa and former Mashonaland West Chairman Themba Mliswa. The two represent Headlands and Hurungwe West respectively in Parliament. Party spokesman Simon Kayamoyo told journalists after the Politburo meeting that by-elections will be held in the two constituencies that were represented by Mutasa and Mliswa in Parliament. Mr. Mutasa is accused of disrespecting the party leadership and dragging the name of the party in the mud. First Lady Grace Mugabe attended the Politburo meeting for the first time after being elected leader of the Women's League in December. For perspective, reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda, who says Mutasa's expulsion was widely expected.
The fact that this happens after the return of the First Lady, and also that ZANU-PF dragged in making the decision, means that both President Mugabe and the First Lady have been able to assert themselves and make sure that this decision reflected what they wanted, and that everybody would have understood it as their decision rather than them acting out of pressure from the lower structures of the party. But I think also that this may mean that certainly we will not have any more expulsions, because if that were to be the case, it would necessarily become very reckless on the part of the ZANU-PF Politburo to sort of create a huge outsider network out of expelled members of the party.
How do you see Mr. Mliswa and Mr. Mutasa proceeding?
I think that ZANU-PF has a long history of expelling people, and that it almost depends on the aptitude and the abilities of those that are expelled to manage themselves, with the view of whether returning back to the party or certainly staying outside the party completely. But I think that both Mliswa and Mutasa owe a great deal of their personal wealth and so forth to their membership to ZANU-PF and to the presidency of President Mugabe. And for that reason, I think that they will still be under massive control of the party, and that is possibly the reason why Mai Mujuru has herself, despite massive economic and political influence, may or will not be able to set up a separate party from ZANU-PF, because they have a lot more to lose from completely estranging themselves as individuals from the powers within ZANU-PF.
That was political analyst Nkululeko Sibanda speaking with Studio 7 on the line from England.
There was chaos in the House of Parliament today when Acting Speaker Mabel Chinomona tried to eject Opposition Movement for Democratic Change lawmakers for protesting that cabinet ministers have been failing to turn up to respond to their queries during the traditional Wednesday question time. Ivan Chifera has details from the capital.
Those are opposition MDC officials demanding cabinet ministers come and answer questions in parliament. Only one minister, Joseph Made of Agriculture, was present when parliament business started, leaving backbenchers angry. The majority of the cabinet ministers were apparently attending a ZANU-PF Politburo meeting at the party's headquarters in Harare. But MDC lawmakers argued this is not the first time that ministers had failed to answer questions from their constituencies on Wednesdays. This led Harare Central lawmaker Murisi Zuzai of the Tsvangirai MDC to tell Ms. Chinomona that he was fed up by what he said was the cabinet minister's disrespect of the legislature as they continued to miss the weekly question and answer sessions. He said, despite several warnings, ministers have continued to defy parliament. Nelson Chamisa of Kwazana East and also of the Tsvangirai MDC formation then suggested that question time be stood over until the time more ministers would have arrived.
We accept your ruling on Mr. Zuzai's point of order. My suggestion is that why don't we stand down question time until ministers arrive? Because we feel our privileges are being violated by ministers' failure to come and answer questions.
Chinomona put Chamisa's proposal to the House and ZANU-PF lawmakers objected, leading to the commotion, which lasted for the first hour of Parliament sitting time. Lawmakers submit questions seeking clarity from ministers on policy issues every Wednesday. Chaos then ensued and attempts by Chinomona to eject MDC lawmakers like Tabita Kumalo and Solomon Madzore were blocked by their colleagues who started shouting across the floor that the MPs will not leave the chamber. The Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation, which beams Parliament Question Time live every Wednesday, went off air as the commotion continued and security personnel ordered journalists in the press gallery to switch off their cell phones. The journalists were told that they were not allowed to take pictures or use their phones in the gallery. MDC lawmakers say ZANU-PF ministers have since the unity government developed a knack of not coming to parliament to answer questions from lawmakers, despite the fact that Wednesday is set aside specifically for them to answer questions from the backbenchers. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Reached for comment, Bulawayo East Member of Parliament Tabita Kumalo, who was almost ejected from Parliament with her Dzivarasekwa counterpart Solomon Madzore, explains her role and ordeal in today's proceedings.
Honorable Madzore and myself were targeted because we were the two that were standing up demanding that the ministers must report for duty to Parliament and they must respect Parliament. We kept on heckling, demanding their presence, and that did not go down well with the Speaker of the House. So she decided the best thing that she'd do was to invoke the Standing Rules and Orders, Section 71, which compels her to instruct the Sergeant of Arms to take us outside. Unfortunately, she did not manage because the members of the MDC, MPs, defended what we're doing and they protected us.
Do you think your lobbying will make a difference?
Our lobbying is sure going to make a difference because to us, these are warning shots. Come next week, Wednesday, they are not there. We will keep on heckling and lobbying until such time they respect. Because what is critical, we have got three arms of government and we are one of those arms, which is the legislature. We have a right to be heard.
That was Bulawayo East Member of Parliament Tabita Kumalo on the line with Studio 7's Thandekile Mhlanga from Harare.
Still with Parliament, Platform for Youth Development Trust Director Clarice Maduku was yesterday denied access into Parliament by suspected Central Intelligence operatives who took him to Harare Central Police Station for questioning for 4 hours. Maduku, who had driven to Parliament from Chipinge at the invitation of Youth and Empowerment Parliamentary Portfolio Committee Chairman and ZANU-PF Member of Parliament for Gokwe Nembudzia, Justice Mayor Wajgajena, said the officers wanted to know what his interest in Parliament was for him to drive such a long distance to attend a session. Maduku, whose mobile phone was confiscated upon his release, says his interrogators accused him of plotting to demonstrate against President Robert Mugabe in Parliament. He was given back his phone today, but only after receiving a warning not to associate himself with people trying to allegedly remove the president from office.
Yesterday and two, I went to Parliament as part of my routine work as the director of Central Development Trust. But I discovered that the Parliament has been made an unsafe place because when I arrived, I was denied getting into the gallery on the basis of my name, that I'm Clarice Maduku, and that was the basis that I'm leading a youth organization. I discovered that when they denied me entry, their suspicion was that I might have been organizing other young people to come and protest in Parliament, and that I was continuing to be very strong in demanding justice for Chisumbanje community.
So after they refused you entry into Parliament, did they just let you go?
It is very sad, and I want to complain to the police force and to the Central Intelligence that after denying me entry, I was asked a barrage of questions. Some of the questions are not answerable, like saying, why do you want to kill the president? Why are you advocating for Mugabe must go? Things that were foreign to me, because as an organization, we are not about Mugabe must go, we are about beneficiation. The community of young people must be sort of like responsible for their community development. So I was shocked that they were giving me accusations that are foreign to me. So they held me for 1 hour at the Parliament office. That place that's supposed to be civil, a place that's supposed to be very peaceful. Then after an hour of interrogation, they also took my phone, and then I was sent to Harare police station, in the central police station, where I was asked a lot of questions by up to 20 people who were not in the uniform.
That was Platform for Youth Development Trust Director Clarice Maduku on the phone from Harare with Studio 7. We failed to reach the police for a comment.
MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai has joined the growing list of Zimbabweans who are petitioning Justice Rita Makarau to dissolve the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission for alleged major shortcomings and incompetence. Makarau chairs the ZEC, which is under mounting pressure after the main opposition political parties in the country started boycotting by-elections, accusing the electoral body of failing to manage polls properly. The Youth Alliance is circulating the petition for signatures, and the list is said to be growing. Last month, the MDC wrote to Makarau demanding a copy of the electronic voters' roll used in 2013. But ZEC has failed to produce the required document.
Now, the party has filed a court petition to stop any electoral processes in the country until such a time when all modalities regarding the conduct of elections are put in place. Makarau told the Parliament Portfolio Committee this week that ZEC is now in charge of the voters' roll and not the Registrar General's office. She also promised to avail a voters' roll to all parties ahead of 3 by-elections at the end of next month. Justice Makarau blamed the delays in aligning the new and the old constitution for the string of litigations ZEC is facing. Efforts to get a comment from Makarau were futile as her phone went unanswered. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with Chairman of the Youth Alliance, Gilbert Mutubuki, who says ZEC is a legitimate crisis.
We have decided to do so because it is according to the constitution of Zimbabwe. As according to the Constitution of Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, which is ZEC, should be independent, meaning it should be independent from the Ministry of Justice. And the ZEC Commission is still under Ministry of Justice, which is unconstitutional. So we, as people of Zimbabwe, we have decided to write petition to Makarao to say what we are doing is wrong, and we cannot allow you to continue doing that.
What is the target? How many signatures are you looking at?
We are looking at 20,000 signatures.
How many have you collected so far?
So far, we have collected 4,567.
Are there any prominent Zimbabweans who have signed this petition apart from Mr. Tsvangirai?
Yeah, there are many prominent politicians. We have Ocean Mangoma, who has signed. We have Tendai Biti, who has also signed. We have the president of PTZ, who has signed. And we have also many people, students have signed, youth have signed, vendors.
That was Chairman Gilbert Mutubuki of the Youth Alliance speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
we take a look at life in the diaspora and how those out of the country are helping their country.
But first, a brief look at regional and international news.
Geneva prosecutors have raided the Swiss office of the British banking giant HSBC and announced a criminal investigation into accusations it was laundering money. The raid was taking place at the offices of HSBC Private Bank, Switzerland, according to a statement released today by Geneva's prosecutor.
The United Nations Security Council is scheduled to hold an emergency session today on the crisis in Libya, a country that has struggled for political stability while militia groups and an internationally backed government battle for power and territory.
And the head of Nigerian militant group Boko Haram has threatened to disrupt the country's elections, which were already postponed until next month because of violence. In a new video posted online late yesterday, Boko Haram chief Abubakar Shekau said that even if clashes cost his fighters their lives, Allah will not allow the elections to proceed.
The United States Embassy in Harare has issued a statement refuting a story published by the state-controlled Herald newspaper this week on money alleged to have been disbursed and misused by non-governmental organizations in the country. Based on the allegations against the USAID, the U.S. government has now responded, saying the February 16th edition of the Herald newspaper published a page one article that carried, quote, a great deal of misinformation and regarding USAID support to the NGO sector in Zimbabwe. The statement says one of the greatest pieces of erroneous information was contained in the headline itself, which asserted that the United States provided $850 million in funds to Zimbabwe NGOs between 2011 and 2014. The statement said USAID provides funding to improve food security, increase agricultural production and farmer incomes, support economic resilience and develop small business, promote civil society and democratic engagement, and provide health services to save lives.
In 2014, the U.S. government provided approximately $160 million in assistance to Zimbabwe, $130 million of which went to improving health services for Zimbabweans in areas including HIV/AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, nutrition, maternal child health, and reproductive health. The embassy said the U.S. government works with a variety of partners and organizations and adheres to the highest standards for accountability for U.S. funds, adding Washington takes seriously allegations regarding misuse of resources. The Herald also reported that the U.S. government is currently auditing financial books of most NGOs in the country following allegations of abuse of funds. The statement from the embassy did not talk about the audit, but said the USAID Office of the Inspector General is an independent office responsible for investigating such claims.
Some Zimbabweans say the country should find innovative ways of utilizing millions of dollars trickling into the economy through diaspora remittances of up to $800 million annually in order to enhance social and economic development. They say currently there's lack of trust between people living in the diaspora, government, and recipients over the remittances, as the bulk of the money is used for social welfare purposes for struggling Zimbabweans facing a fast declining economy. They argue that there's need for government to create a conducive environment for investing the funds. Zimbabweans living in the diaspora sent back some $840 million last year compared to $790 million in 2013. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube turned to mobile phone businessman Gary Dumane living in Pennsylvania, USA, and economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labor and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. Dumane says while the money benefits millions of Zimbabweans, a lot still needs to be done in terms of direct and corporate investment.
Any form of remittance targeting or going to Zimbabwe is definitely helpful. But most importantly, I think most Zimbabweans, as far as I'm concerned, do not have social welfare. You know, the people who are in the diaspora are their social welfare. So if folks here are not sending money home, then people at home are in trouble. We're seeing money being used in many fronts. But most importantly, I think we are all aware at this point that the Zimbabwean government is actually benefiting a lot from money that comes from outside. It's coming at a macro level as well as at a micro level.
Mr. Chitambara, what is your view on this?
Definitely, I think there is a huge benefit to the economy, number one, in terms of propping up consumer spending. I think what these remittances are actually doing is that they are supplementing the meager incomes that guys here in Zimbabwe are actually earning. And so that obviously helps to boost consumer spending in the economy, and ultimately it also helps to boost aggregate demand, I think, which is a key pillar in terms of economic growth. Then what it also does is that it serves as a social protection or social welfare mechanism that helps to mitigate the impact of extreme poverty among households. So I think the economies or the advantages are on those two macro levels, in terms of number one, boosting consumer spending, and number two, social welfare mechanism or mitigation strategy against poverty.
And then we see, Mr. Dumane, that whenever you send money home, you expect people to make some worthwhile investment. At the same time, you'll be taking care of your own welfare this side. How do you take into account some of those challenges?
It's a bit of a challenge, I think. One thing for sure is life in the U.S., and I can say maybe I cannot speak for people in other markets like in Europe, for instance. But I think we are all fundamentally the same. We bear the same challenges. We live here in the U.S. We have expectations financially that we have to meet. Now, our obligations to the home country, they also create an additional strain. But it's a strain that you can never run away from. And without that particular, tethering, from people in the diaspora and people at home, I think fundamentally we are all lost.
And adding on to this one, Mr. Chitambara, can you see some kind of projects that are being done by people in Zimbabwe that are actually benefiting from the diaspora?
The activities are more concentrated in the non-formal or in the informal sector. And as you know, there is a big disjuncture between the formal and the non-formal, and the linkages are very, very weak. So most of the activities are being done on a subsistence level. So these are not like serious businesses that are being done by people, but I think these are just businesses to enable people to be able to eke out a livelihood. You know, times are hard in the economy at the moment. The slowdown, the recession in the economy is actually worsening. Companies are closing. So most of the guys found themselves in the non-formal economy or in the what we call the informal sector.
Now, back to you, Mr. Dumane. So is there any way that maybe the diaspora can be creative by coming out with, let's say, a big package for Zimbabwe? Maybe they form an insurance company or a big company and then run it. Is that not possible?
There are attempts that are being made at individual level. Money gets sent, but there is some kind of abuse of that financial aspect. I think there is a broken trust. At a corporate level, we're not seeing a lot of direct investment going to Zimbabwe. Yes, we're seeing attempts by individuals, but those are falling away. But I think there is a need for us to look at an involvement of the governance. The governance needs to improve in terms of make it attractive for folks who are coming from outside to I don't want to sound like a textbook, but you really have to work on incentivizing the diasporans to come back home, invest human capital. That's the most important part. You start with the capital.
And that was Jerry Dumane, a Zimbabwean businessman living in Pennsylvania here in the USA. You also heard from economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labor and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, both speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
The Constitutional Court has reserved judgment in a case in which two people from Bulawayo are challenging the constitutionality of the law that criminalizes the transmission of the killer HIV virus. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights lawyer David Ofisi says the two are challenging the constitutional validity of Section 79 of the criminal law, arguing the provision is too wide, dangerous, and unlawful, in the end infringing on their clients' rights to protection of the law. Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye speaks to Mr. Ofisi to hear more about the case.
The full constitutional bench reserved judgment in the two challenges we had to deal with, Section 79 of the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act. What we asked the court to turn its mind to was to the breadth of this law, the fact that it is just too wide, the fact that even though it is a law that targets people who have deliberately transmitted HIV, in the framing of the law, it goes beyond people with knowledge of HIV and actually says anybody with a real risk or possibility of having, who realizes a real risk or possibility of having been infected, who does anything that can lead to transmission, because the import of that is that anybody who is ever engaged in sexual intercourse, for example, must realize a real risk or possibility, even more so because, condoms are not 100% effective. So even those who use protection must realize the risk. And so our argument is that this is far too wide, it's far too broad. It affects too many people and it invades privacy because it requires a lecture of sorts before sexual intercourse around the risk and possibilities, even for married couples. So the breadth of the law is what we ask the court to consider. And we did not, in this instance, take issue with the object of people who willfully transmit to others.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights attorney David Ofisi is speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye from Harare.
The Zimbabwe cricket team put up a brilliant show against the Proteas of South Africa at their opening match at the ICC Cricket World Cup Sunday. But stern tests lie ahead, as reporter Michael Kariati tells us how.
Nobody, including their most loyal followers, expected the Chevron to put up such a strong resistance against the mighty Proteas. But the Chevrons now have more on their hands than the Proteas test. The Zimbabweans are second from bottom in their group just above the West Indies, and a defeat against the United Arab Emirates Thursday could see them sink rock bottom and on their way out of the tournament. Victory over the associate side will put the Zimbabweans back on track for a place in the Super 8 stage, which has been the dream of the whole country. Captain Elton Chigumbura thinks the performance against the South Africans has raised spirits in the camp.
With the performance that we saw, it's a good sign. It gives confidence to the guys.
There is also an extra reward for the Zimbabweans. A win over the United Arab Emirates would guarantee the Chevrons a $45,000 haul. The International Cricket Council has dangled a 45,000 carat for a team that wins a game in their group stages. The star of the South African show, Hamilton Masakadza, who plundered 80 runs against the Proteas, thinks the Chevron's current form gives them an edge.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Time is not on our side, but before we go, a quick recap of today's top story.
There was chaos in Parliament today when Acting Speaker Mabo Chinomona tried to eject opposition MDC lawmakers.
And the U.S. Embassy in Harare dismisses as a great deal of misinformation a story published by the state-controlled Herald. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri. Stay tuned.